Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this post Sunderland, post FA Cup, post any realistic chance of winning anything this season. Talking to Blues podcast. George and Andy, I'm quite reluctant to say this, but I say it every week, so I'm going to say it again. How are you both?
Pretty good.
Yeah, on a personal note, yeah, not too bad at all.
Good.
And Everton.
And Andy and George, as Evertonians, how are you both?
Fed
yeah,
up.
as a whole of a different colour.
Yeah. Just, I mean, where do you start? Where do you start? I mean, I'll tell you where I'm going to start is in the aftermath of yesterday's defeat. And trying to keep a level head on the anger that was burning within. I thought I'll have a scout round of the internet and the forums and this, that, and the other, and see what other people were thinking. And I was going to get onto stupid penalty run-ups later, but I've just watched Maduuke of Arsenal with an idiotic run-up and then miss the target. So it serves that dickhead right. But anyway, back to our debacle yesterday. And I kind of looked around. I thought, before I rant and vent, as I probably might end up doing, I thought, I'll just see what the general opinion is. And I get the impression that the Everton fan base is torn, probably about 60-40 in Moyes' favour, despite recent results and obviously exiting another competition at the first hurdle, although yeah. It was second hurdle in the League Cup, wasn't it? But never mind, you know what I mean, early doors. And I found lots of people who were on the side of, you know, look how many players we've had missing through injuries and suspension and the AFCON Cup. So we couldn't have expected a great deal. And then there's the people on the other side who are sick to the back teeth of mediocre performances from both individuals and collective, and obviously decisions made by the manager. So I thought that was, I expected it to be more or less 70-30 against, and it wasn't. It's kind of 60-40 people being prepared to not forgive, but have a more of an understanding, leaning more in the way of, well, look how many players we didn't have available for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
So it was far from our strongest side, and this, that, and the other, but I'm finding it difficult to align myself with that side of the equation, because I just thought there were elements of the performances today that were abject, just disappointing. There didn't seem to me to be any fire in, or very much fire in, too many bellies until Asnu came on and made a huge difference in his first appearance. I just very, very disappointed overall. And then I heard some of David Moyes' post-game comments and... Pardon?
No, sorry, Andy, I was coughing. Go ahead.
All right. And again, I was disappointed. He didn't seem... I'm probably doing him a terrible injustice, but he didn't seem unduly upset or concerned. And it just, I don't know, it just, yesterday didn't sit well at all. And, you know, and other things like when the fans have gone to, you know, like the 1878s who go to all that trouble of dressing up the stadium. They did it marvellously at Goodison, and they've been doing it marvellously at Hill Dickinson. And yet the club don't take into account or seem to be oblivious to the fact that these guys are going above and beyond in dressing the stadium up in blue and white, and then we come out in a kit that's neon black and pink. And it's like, what is that about? And I know the colour of your kit shouldn't matter. It's a game of football, for crying out loud. You should be able to go out in pyjamas and play, if necessary. They do it in cricket. But it seems to be, to me, it just signalled a disconnect between the club and the fan base. You know, first round of the FA Cup, we're playing a Premiership side, we're at home, we've got all the incentive to make up for the errors of the last few games, you know, a poor performance at Burnley, a shocking performance against Brentford, and a quite honestly a shocking performance and result second half particularly against Wolves. So you think, why aren't these guys absolutely coming out of the traps, you know, this, and playing at pace and quickly and with genuine intent? And I didn't see any of that yesterday. I was really very, very disappointed. And like I said, silly things like another kit. Why? What is going on within the club that they make what many people are seeing as a bonehead decision on a kit, but more importantly, that the players that are available weren't able to raise their game sufficiently to give Sunderland a proper game, and that's even before we get to the nonsense of penalties. Just, you know, and you know, people, lots of people are commenting that they are coming to the end of the tether. You know, I don't know what the direction of the club is at the minute. I really don't.
Right.
I don't know where we're going. I don't know what purpose in life would Everton Football Club serves other than to rinse people of money. Dispirited.
Thanks, Andy. I think there's a lot to get into with that, and I think I'm going to break down a lot of what you said, and I'm not going to disagree with all of it by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay. Disagree
George.
With it as much as you want.
No. because I think you raised some valid points. George, first of all, your opinion.
Well, I would be with the. I got to the end of that and thought, this squad, however thin and threadbare it is, and I do take all that on board, needs a different coach. Because I thought what Andy's talking about, what I saw was they can't come out and play fast because they don't know how they're going to play. Now, he said in his post-match that they'd set them up and told them how they wanted to play against Sunderland, and then they didn't go out and do it in the first half. So they all got a rocket and they booked up in the second half and in extra time, la la la. And as Andy points out, well, thanks ever so much, but I kind of sat there for the first 45 minutes as well. But what bothered me was there's no shape to the play at all. The players actually don't know how they're playing. You start better on his own. Well, that's kind of like a signal to lose the ball an awful lot. And against a team organised by a player as smart as Xhaka, that meant the first half went pretty much to plan, really. We didn't play. They did. They were well in front. Pickford hadn't made a couple of saves. The whole thing could have been over at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
And because of my job and my profession, you know, in the end, what actors do is they're people watchers. They watch people and they store away things. Moyes looks, I'll be blunt, done to me. I'm not saying that he doesn't care. It's just he's not as engaged as I think he should, as I think the players have a right to think he is. So all that Andy said, and I agree with him about the lack of tempo and the lack of get up and go and come on and all that. It can't be there because the players aren't sure what they're doing. If you know, so you, it's all down to character. So in the end, over the whole 90 minutes, Garner looked like what he is, the brightest thing we've got. And I thought Mikalenko had a good game, and really, that's kind of it, I'm afraid. Everybody else huffed and puffed without knowing what they were doing. How do we want to come out? Are we going to play out, or are we going to hoof it? If we're going to hoof it, we're going to lose it. Then what are we going to do? Win it back? Oh, and what about these wingers? How, when are we supposed to? But you know, if you don't, I think the players, that squad of players, and the ones who were not there, and the ones who are going to come back from injury and so on and so forth, need a reset. They need different level setting, and they need a different plan as to how they're going to play football, because I don't think what I watched yesterday that we had one. And I have to lay that at Moyes' door. And I think he looks just a little bit tired, actually. I don't know. I would like to, you know, I'm reminded of the podcast we did where we said, thanks ever so much, Sean Dyche. You've done very well to keep us up. Here's your money, on you go. I feel like that about Moyes. Thanks ever so much for what you've done. You've steadied the club. We're sort of vaguely heading for Europe, except we haven't won one in seven now. He looks a bit done to me. That was what I took from that, apart from wishing to praise Sunderland for being a really well-organized team. And here's something. Ever since, I can never, ever remember the Everton players ever going into a huddle. No matter, we've had about 11 managers in the last, since Moyes left, and they never go into a huddle. But the, so the camera focused on the Sunderland huddle, and there was Xhaka giving everybody else, all other 10 of them, the level that they have to play at and a reminder of what they're going to do. And then they went out and did it. I wonder if there's something in Everton's constitution that says thou shalt not have a huddle where the skipper will go, that's what I want. Because clearly the manager, but almost by his own admission, hadn't done it in the first half, because he said in his post-match, we were not there, not at the races. Well, whose job is it to make sure they are at the races? Why aren't you at the races? All right, if you get beat, I never mind getting beat. I just can't bear this kind of aimless shapers. Oh dear, didn't quite happen, did it? I'm a bit done with it, and I feel that the change needs to come there. Although I would quite like to hear from above him as well. That was my two pennies.
I think that was more like a full shilling,
Well, thanks, Andy.
that.
I'll try and come in with a half crown.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure I can actually on this occasion. Because I think, actually, I think both of your analysis, well, I don't fully agree with every aspect of what you've both said, you know, contain reasonable justification for your stances. And I think I said in a message to you both yesterday, it is getting more and more difficult to defend David Moyes. So, having been a big advocate of his, and I still am, in terms of current form, it is difficult to justify. I find it puzzling that he can't get a better tune out of whoever he puts on the pitch. And you know, we had nine players missing yesterday, but we still should be able to field a team that is competitive, at least from a physical point of view, from a, you know, physicality point of view, from a desire to
From an effort point of view.
gain possession, retain possession, present a threat to the opposition. And obviously, certainly in the first half, that was not the case at all. And is that, and I don't know the answer to this, but I'm just posing the question, is that entirely just tactical? because Moyes said, didn't he say that he got it wrong slightly in terms of being too passive? But then, why does he have to wait till half time to realize that?
Or quiet.
Yeah.
And what could he have done about it anyway, given given the setup? Is it down to fact that Moyes perhaps has just become so ultra defensive that we basically give up, giving the opposition, even at home, as much possession as they want? I think this is it, 75% possession Sunderland had in the first half. Now, whoever you're putting on the pitch, I don't think at home you can genuinely think, particularly if you haven't got attackers that are, ready goal scorers or convert a lot of chances. Do question the logic in saying, okay, you can have as much possession as you want. So if you've got, let's say, 75%, you've got three times as much possession as we've got. So that puts us at a disadvantage. Yet we still believe that in the quarter of the possession that we have throughout the game, we can score more goals than you can.
Ludicrous, isn't it?
Now, well, it's beginning to feel that way. If our defence is playing out of its skin, as it did do earlier in the season, there's perhaps a justification for that, because you can argue, well, we're not conceding many goals, therefore the requirement to score a large number of goals is less, but for that very obvious reason. But if, as seems the case in recent weeks, we're becoming defensively less sure of ourselves for a number of reasons, and we can touch on those re well, let's touch on those reasons in a second, then the onus has to be on, if we're going to concede more in order to stay in any game, let alone be ahead in a game and win a game, we're going to have to score more. So don't we need more of the ball? Don't we need to do something more than just a standard 4-4-1-1, which is effectively what we did yesterday? If Sunderland are a well-managed team, they've had a good season back in the Premier League, but they're not Barcelona by any stretch of the imagination. And not once did we even, or it seems apparent to me, that not once, and particularly in the first half, did we even attempt to put them out of their stride. We effectively gave them the ball, allowed them to play in the manner in which they wanted to play, and we allowed two things in particular to happen, I think. They gained confidence because they realized that this team, the opposition, Everton, aren't really at it today. And of course, the crowd start getting on Everton's back, understandably. Or if not getting on their back, the noise levels drop. And
The crowd aren't a factor. We've moved into this shiny new stadium that everyone keeps yapping about. And unfortunately, the atmosphere is not yet, we haven't got a Hill Dickinson atmosphere yet, because the team are playing so passively, to use Moyes' word, that there's nothing, precious little, for the crowd to get excited about and to get noisy about, to encourage, and for the noise to roll down from the terraces and invigorate the players even further. When you come out and you're prepared to give up 60+% percentage of the play to the opposition, is it any wonder the crowd are quiet and then start to get on the players' back? This is what I don't understand. The players themselves, but the manager and the coaching staff and anybody that's been involved in football surely understands that if you go about the game in the right manner, in other words, to play at pace, play at tempo, try and win tackles, as well as look to score goals, you will get the crowd behind you. If you get the crowd behind you, you've got half a chance. The crowd can't score goals, but the crowd can give you that meat injection to go and try stuff that you've maybe not been trying. Nobody's taking a risk at the moment. No, no player is taking a risk on the pitches today. What did Dibbling do? Zero. You know, this is a kid that's been brought in with allegedly a great future ahead of him, and he's to me, he's not. And I'm not just singling out Tyler Dibbling. I'm really not. But nobody was prepared to take a risk yesterday, other than maybe Jimmy Garner. And if you're not prepared to take a risk, you're never going to get the crowd on your side. And at the minute, what was the crowd yesterday? What, I don't know, 52,000. Maybe there was a few empty seats. I don't know. But 7,000, 7,500 Sunderland fans knew exactly what they had to do. They had to get behind the team, and they did throughout. The Everton crowd barely raised a muster until Asnu, won that penalty. And I'm not knocking the crowd, but the crowd need to be invigorated, and they'll reinvigorate the players. It starts on the pitch. Give the crowd something to cheer. Play at pace, get a tackle in. Give everyone a lift. Give something to cheer, something to get excited about, something to get involved with. And there's nothing. It just isn't happening. And it's not isolated instances. Yes, you can say, well, all right, some of our better players aren't there. Illeman and Dye puts play gets people on the feet. Jack Grealish can get people on the feet. KDH can get people on the feet. They're not there through injury, suspension, and the AFCON Cup. But to me, where's the inspiration within the club? I'm just not seeing it. I'm tending to agree. I agree with our kid on Moisey. Looks done. He looks like he's run out of ideas.
Just
Is he a bad manager? No. Is he an exciting manager? Hell no.
to answer your question, Paul, about what your hint was that he waited till half time before he did anything, and he certainly legged it down the tunnel. My memory goes back to a night match at Goodison when we played Newcastle United, and Pardew had been suspended, so he was in the stands and Moyes had the touchline to himself. And Anichebe scored at the Gladys Street end, and it was disallowed. And this was long, long before VAR. And but the coaching staff had a replay there. You remember those days, it shouldn't have been disallowed. And Moyes was hopping mad. And he ran down the touchline, screaming at the players, get into them. That's what he could have done yesterday. But that bloke doesn't seem to be there to me. And I'm sad for it because, one of the best things about him is his passion for the game and for the club. But I don't know.
Yeah,
And I think I'm.
the fire in his belly is embers at the moment.
Well, why?
I don't
I
know.
mean, I don't disagree, Andy, but why? Because it's kind of, there's something very passive about the whole club. And one of the things that you've been banging on about, Paul, is why do we never hear from this guy? We never hear from that guy. We never hear from anybody up from the top table. Maybe that's getting to Moyes as well. Because presumably he's every right to feel, yeah, well, all the fucking flak stops with me, doesn't it? Because there's nobody else visible. Now he has to take his share of criticism for the fact that we're not playing well and we're losing. And another reason why there's not a lot of atmosphere at Bramley Moor is because most people think, well, what's going to happen this week? Because it hasn't happened for about 2 months now. All that doesn't help, but I mean, I'm hypothesizing and I'm kind of, wanting to defend the man because he's our boss, but and well, like him, like you, like all of us, or every Evertonian, we don't know what anybody above him thinks. They might be planning any old manner of stuff. We don't know. But we're halfway through the transfer window as well, and I haven't heard anything about that.
We're not even featuring in the rumours.
No.
You know, in fact, we're not even featuring in the idiotic rumours.
Can I
You
just
know.
raise two other things to ask you a question, the pair of you? One, no, three things. One, how come there was no VAR yesterday?
There's no VAR in the third and fourth rounds, bro, because not all the grounds can accommodate it, bearing in mind that there's so many games being played on
On
non-Premiership,
Premier League club,
Championship
yeah.
pitches.
Oh, okay, fair enough then. Wasn't it nice that there was no VAR? And did you think that we deserved the penalty we got?
We wouldn't have got the penalty had there
No.
been VAR.
It. I mean, I've watched quite a number of games this weekend now, and no VAR is. Yeah, I'd rather stay VAR-less, if you like. Having said that, there were, you know, and we talked about inconsistencies in refereeing and inconsistencies in VAR decision making or influence upon referees' thinkings. I just watched a Derby versus Leeds cup tie, and there was a high challenge on Gnonto of Leeds. Studs up, it caught him. It didn't catch him quite as badly as he made out, but it definitely caught him, and it was literally 10 yards in front of Anthony Taylor, the referee. And the commentary team are at it. Anthony Taylor's taking his time. He was obviously waiting to see how badly. If he was hurt, how Gnonto was. And even the commentary team said he's just waiting to see what happens with Gnonto and then he'll produce a card. And he didn't. Not even a yellow. And I thought to myself, holy smoke, you know, all right, we've not got VAR, so they couldn't refer him to it, but it was literally 10 yards in front of him. So, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's a dichotomy. I don't know. It's the refereeing decisions are bizarre at times. But overall, in the games I've watched so far this weekend, and I'm watching another one now with Portsmouth and Arsenal, it to me, yeah, leave it with, you know, ditch VAR. If we're going to have error, let it be human error and not computer enhanced error.
But as we said a couple of days ago, that's not going to happen because enough clubs believe that
No, no.
they're advantaged by VAR
Yeah.
to want to keep the system, even if the clubs who think they're advantaged by VAR are in the minority. There's enough of them not to get the 14 votes that are
Yeah.
necessary to change it. Let's just go back a little bit. I think, George, in particular, that you made an interesting point about David Moyes. So David Moyes as a character, I think, is not the type of person that gives up easily.
Nope.
And he probably recognizes that this is his last major gig. He's what, 62, I think.
Next person.
And he's back at the club where he knows, well, don't really need to describe the relationship between the club and him. You know, he's in the best place he possibly could
He's in
be.
his comfortable place, yeah.
Yeah. And notwithstanding what's happened in recent weeks, the first 12 months has been a success in terms of taking the club from where we were to where we are now. And that's not to say that there's a whole load of things that need to be done that haven't yet been done. The squad is obviously the major concern in that, and I'm going to address that in a few minutes. That perhaps the transfer window that we thought was a decent transfer window wasn't quite as good as we thought it was, and then we need to ask the questions as to why that was the case, because there has to be a logical explanation to all of this. This is professional sports. It's not. We're not just turning up on a Sunday morning and having a kick around. There's so much time and effort and so many people involved in all of the decisions that nothing is ever left to chance anymore. So if things aren't working, there's a reason why they're not working. The more complex a structure becomes, and the less evidence there is of a positive result coming out of that complex structure, it means that the complex structure is probably the fault as against any of the individuals within that structure.
Right.
I mean, I said that's just common sense. So if you think about David Moyes when he was at his most successful at Everton, he ran the shop. He was the manager, the coach. He would have been the director of football had a director of football sort of really existed in those days. And within the constraints of whatever financial budget Bill Kenwright gave him, he had pretty much free rein to do what he wanted. Sometimes, maybe not when it came to selling players, because Kenwright intervened and sold players for financial necessity, which we've discussed many times over many years in the past. But generally speaking, in terms of recruiting players,
Yep.
Moyes had the authority to go subject to any budgetary constraints that may have been in place. And if you think then about, okay, so what type of players did David Moyes recruit? And critically, what did he do with the players that were coming through the academy? Because we had a functioning academy at the time. I was thinking about this, and in fact, somebody else mentioned it. Gav Buchan mentioned it a couple of days ago, and I think he, well, my point is his point. Moyes was very, very good, and has been consistently good throughout his career, of taking players of a certain age and developing them, and that would typically be players around the age of 22, 23, and developing them into, much better players than they were at that age. Might take a couple of years to do so, but if you go through Moyes' side, Leon Osman, Tim Cahill, Pienaar, Baines, there's so many players became much, much better players under Moyes' tutelage, but they weren't coming direct from an academy. They were coming to the club, having already, to a degree, learnt a bit about the game, normally at a lower level, but they were coming into the club as reasonably experienced professionals. There's not
Right.
great evidence of David Moyes ever having taken a an academy player and developing an academy player to a much, much higher level. And might it not be the case that David Moyes' strengths are taking those players who've got potential, have already got a bit of experience, and drawing that potential out, as against taking players with little or no experience, drawing the potential out and allowing them to develop at a time when they don't have that experience?
Well, he talked about that in his post-match, didn't he? About how reluctant he is to do that.
So that's a weakness. But then you have to think, well, if that was the case, and if the recruitment decisions were all David Moyes' decisions, he would address that by recruiting the types of players that he knows he's got a track record of developing. So he would recruit players of a certain age, maybe who've come from lower divisions, and he does his job on them. This is just a sort of an argument of logic more than any evidence that that's what's happening now. So you think then, okay, so what's happening now, and what happens in a game like yesterday? Well, the most of the players that he brought into the squad are the younger players, or players who haven't played a great deal of football under David Moyes. For one of two reasons: either the established players are playing in their position, or David Moyes doesn't trust those players. And we've talked about this on many occasions throughout this season in particular, and we've given reasons why perhaps he doesn't trust young players in certain positions, because he feels an obligation to get a certain number of points by a certain amount of time within the season, or he doesn't want us to lose possession in certain parts of the pitch. For example, which I think is one of the big problems that we've got with Dybbling, that Dybbling doesn't feel as if he's able to do what he normally does because of the fear of losing possession. That's just one example. And we're in a situation whereby if you look at the structure of recruitment that goes on at Everton, it's actually a very complex structure. If you look around football generally, not many teams have adopted the strategy that we've adopted. So yes, there's much more use now of data and analytics in football. But generally speaking, so if you look at like sort of Brentford as a typical example, if you look at Brighton as the other typical example, the initial process is data driven. So the short lists of players is driven from data, and then other people make the final decision as to what's happening. At Everton, we went out and we bought that data company. I think the guy's name was Hammond. Was it Nick Hammond? But maybe it's too early for the work that they do to show results. Certainly, he can't have influenced the decision making last year in terms of recruitment last summer. But then you're like, you look at all the other people who are involved. So we've got this like sort of we don't just have football manager and we don't just have a director of football. We have a director of football, football manager. And then we have all of these technical people. We have three or four people who sit on a committee, including Angus Kinnear. Now, you could argue that Angus Kinnear is there because he's the guy that's got the biggest handle on how the businesses are performing and what we can afford and what the long-term consequences are of buying a player. I would argue that that's a decision that can always be made once a committee of this nature has put forward a proposal, as against somebody like him being in and being part of the first part of the decision-making process, if you get the difference. Maybe the structure that David Moyes, sorry, this is a very lengthy explanation. Maybe the structure that David Moyes is currently now involved in, the structure that the Friedkins wanted to bring in, the structure that the CEO wants to bring in, maybe that structure is the thing that is making Moyes look like he looks at the moment. Perhaps he realizes, perhaps he knows, perhaps he always knew that the people that we recruited were not necessarily the people that he wanted, and that in the absence of the players that he likes and the players in the squad that he likes, when we're having to bring young players through, obviously Harrison Armstrong is an exception to this. Moyes knows in his own mind that he's not really, this is not really, we're not playing to his strengths. I'm not trying to
Now, that's a really good point. I said to Andy the other day, you hire this manager and then give him a pair of handcuffs.
I'm not trying to absolve him from the responsibility because, you know, he's the guy at the top of the pile, and I always believe that accountability starts at the top, not at the bottom. So he is accountable for this, and maybe who knows? Because we don't, as you both said, we don't know anything about what's going on in the club at this moment in time. It might be that he's having all of these arguments 4 or 5 days a week with CEO, with this committee of effectively technical people about what the recruitment plans are for January, what the recruitment plans are going to be for next summer, and actually what he can do as a coach in terms of the players that he's got left to deal with. I'm just trying to apply logic to a situation that doesn't appear to have much logic to it, because I think there has to be a logical explanation to what we're seeing. And maybe just all of that is affecting then his performance and his relationship with the existing players, because it might be that the players themselves are thinking, hang on a minute. We don't think our manager is particularly happy with the setup of the club, but we also might even think that maybe we don't think that the manager is particularly happy with the group of players that he's got to play with, apart from, the established first 11 or the first sort of 12, 13 players. And there isn't anybody else, or there appears not to be anybody else, either on the pitch in terms of like the club captain, or in terms of one of the senior players, or indeed anybody off the pitch who can come in and knock that thought process out of everybody. So they could come in and do one or two things and say, that thought process is complete nonsense. You've got it completely wrong. This is the situation. Ding, bang, 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 bang. So get that out of your head and get on with the job that we pay you to do. Or could they come in and they say, you know what, guys, you're absolutely right. I wouldn't be able to say this in front of David. I wouldn't be able to say it in front of Angus, but you're absolutely right. But nevertheless, it's a situation that we've got to deal with because nothing's going to change for at least the next 6 months, at least until the summer of next year, and possibly the season afterwards. So we know what the situation is. We have to deal with it. I don't think that person exists within the club, either on the pitch or off the pitch. And so perhaps we, despite the fact that we've got many more people who are involved in the running of the club and the running of the team and recruitment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe just this whole thing is totally counterproductive to the way that David Moyes is most effectively used, is most effective in terms of being a manager, but also then in terms of recruitment and everything else. I don't know. I'm just, as I say, just trying to apply logic, albeit from a long way away and with no particular knowledge of actually what is going on. This is just all obviously assumptions, but it seems to me that that's the logical explanation for what we're doing here. None of which, of course, helps what we're seeing on the pitch week in, week out.
No, unfortunately it doesn't, Paul, because I don't disagree with very much of what you've just said. But at the end of the day, however the squad has been put together, those are the tools that Moyes has got to work with. Now, whether he disagrees completely with the way the recruiting is done, in as much as it doesn't appear that the club are signing, as you said, the kind of players that he likes and appears to enjoy working with more, which is, as you said, relatively seasoned pros or players who've got 2 or 3 years under the belt and really understand what's what, or whether it's a bunch of kids that have been put together. I don't know. Ultimately, though, if he's the head coach or the manager, and he's got a coaching staff beneath him, this Billy McKinley, Alan Irvine, and Bainsey, and whoever else is there. Whatever, however the squad is put together, and whether he likes it or not, that's what he's got to work with. That's what he's got. That's what he's entrusted to get the best of. And at this minute in time, for whatever reason, injuries, suspensions, AFCON Cup, whatever, he is not getting a tune out of very many of these players.
Well,
That's his job.
but it's also the job of the players to
I'm not absolving the players either, Paul.
No, I
The
think I
players
don't
should have more self-respect.
I don't, yeah, absolutely. I think all of us are trying here very hard not to blame or not to create a blame culture in this. What we're looking for, which is what this podcast has tried to do for many, many years, is analyze and look for logical explanations as to what's happening either on the pitch or off the pitch, and then perhaps try and move the discussion on to, okay, so what if that actually is the case, what can we do about it in the short term, and what should we th be thinking of doing about it longer term? And obviously it's not our decision to make any of
No,
these
and
decisions.
that's where that I think is where we need some direction from from the hierarchy. We
Correct.
need to know what their thinking is. What do they want from their investment? How much have they invested, the Friedkins, in Everton Football Club, Paul, roughly?
In cash terms, 330 million of their own money.
Right. So, but we've no idea what they expect or demand for their 330 million investment. I haven't got a clue what they're about. You know, are they just, don't, you know, is it, you know, is this a tax write-off for the Friedkin Group, Everton Football Club? I've not got a clue, but I've no idea what they expect to see from the club, from the players, from the manager. I don't necessarily want it to become a hire and fire them scenario whereby, you know, they're given 6 weeks and if they don't do anything, they're gone. You know, like that guy that owned Forest tends to do, and like Chelsea have got a history of doing. I don't want that kind of instability. But I don't know what the Friedkins want from Everton Football Club or what they see Everton Football Club as being in their portfolio of businesses other than another football club.
I think
and I found
it.
Myself thinking last night, and you know, you touched on it before, under in his first tenure as Everton manager, under Bill Kenwright, Moyes ran the show. Everything went through David Moyes. Nothing was done without his full knowledge and approval. And I know that for a fact, because that was the era when my daughter was working there. And so many things that Moyes said, no, we're not doing that. Or, yes, we will do that. And because it impacted upon her role to a degree. So I know that's cast iron fact. That's not supposition. You know, it's not bullshit. It's fact. Moyes ran the show. And in that tenure, whether we liked it or not, you know, whether we approved of the way, you know, or the way the club was run financially and whatnot, and decent players were sold and whatnot, it was just a matter of fact. But Moyes, in his first tenure, made Everton Football Club the best of the rest. There was no equivocation about that. If there was another club that was going to knock on the door and break into the top four as it was at that time, top six now, if you like, it was Everton. We were the best of the rest. Right now, with the way things are, Moyes is looking at getting Everton Football Club to be the best of the worst. We're not challenging. We may do when we get the AFCON players back, when we get the injuries back, and when the suspensions are over. We may. And I hope to God we do. Because, you know, the fans deserve massively more than they're currently being served up with. But right now, we have gone from best of the rest to being, or needing to be, the best of the worst to give us a platform to build on for the future.
I think that's a fair analysis. And
thank
would.
You.
Sorry, I didn't mean that condescendingly. Sorry.
No, you're all right.
I would say, though, we've gone from being, using your words, possibly 12 months ago, almost being the worst of the worst because of our, you know, position that the club found itself in, to being the best of the worst. So that's progress.
Which would be, yes, in that, when you put it like that, we have improved.
Yeah.
And clearly we've improved. We take more points, more away wins, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that taking everything into account, that the biggest fly in the ointment is we have no idea, not a Scooby-Doo, what the ownership and the executive of Everton Football Club want from Everton Football Club. The fans know what we want. We want silverware. We want a team that attacks and plays attractive football and wins games and at least challenges for silverware if we can't actually win silverware. We, if you like, the minimum that the fans want is to be best of the rest again. That's the minimum expectation of the Everton fan base, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think that's where we were sort of where we thought maybe a month ago that we were heading towards, eighth, for example.
Yes, and
Might
dreams
just
of Europe.
squeeze into European competition. Now, I think a couple of things. Well, obviously, suspensions and injuries have put pay to that, but also. I think it's fair to say that our approach to games, particularly the games that we've had at home, seems to have put paid to that. Certainly put paid to, well, on both occasions in terms of domestic cups, the League Cup earlier in the season, and obviously yesterday, our approach to games, and what one has to say, driven by the manager, has led to, very disappointing, results and being knocked out very early in the competition. It's when,
Not
effectively,
just results, Paul, it's performances
yeah,
as well.
performances as well. Yeah. I am going to try and bring in some positives about the performance and how we might want to look up going forwards in a minute.
Okay.
I mean, at one level, the biggest frustration about yesterday was this represent the FA Cup represented our only chance of any form of success and any form of, apart from the run-of-the-mill Premier League games, going home and away as many fans do. The FA Cup always represents that idea that actually something exciting is going to happen, and the season, a meaningful event within the season. Can still happen, i.e., we can get to a semi-final, i.e., we can get to the final, and possibly even when it, obviously a lot of that's been taken away from us now. But to go to the, so let's think about, are there any positives that we can take out of yesterday? And I'm going to suggest a couple at least. Okay, I'll start with probably the weakest argument. Of the three arguments that I'm going to present, I thought Nathan Patterson had a decent game yesterday, and
Agreed.
I
You did.
don't think on the evidence of yesterday in a very poor team, he maybe warrants the sort of levels of distrust that we've all had about him, and obviously the managers had about him. Well, not only one manager, but several managers have had about him. Since he's been at the club. So I thought he was both professional and competent yesterday, which is a big step up from where many other people thought that he might be when they saw his name on the team sheet. So Patterson, I think, was a positive yesterday and, might help us going forwards beyond this period where we've got so many people out. There's two others. Well, Harrison Armstrong, without doubt, is a star in the making, and he's obviously got to go through an awful lot, and he's going to carry a big burden, particularly in this current Everton team. But he looks capable of doing so, and it would be an absolute bonkers decision for us to send him back to Preston at the end of the month, which was what was first mooted, that you've come here for the period, the period where while AFCON is on, and whilst we've got,
Just to shore the squad up.
I think he's demonstrated his value in staying, and I think notwithstanding what we were talking about, or what I was talking about Moyes not being able to manage younger players, this is a kid that has so much ability and already has sufficient maturity to get him through that hurdle. Because yesterday he was the one bright spark. He was the one player who looked to do stuff when he was in possession of the ball. And I think the other player, apart from the established player like James Garner, who is just becoming a more and more valuable player to us as every game throughout the season goes, I think the other one, and Moyes must take note of this, I'm pretty sure he will. Was Adam Asnu, who was, I think he played in the Roma game, didn't he? And then was substituted, having come on. Did he come on as a substitute? And then he was substituted
I
in the
can't
Roma
remember.
game. I think he was. He certainly was substituted.
Right.
And He looked great when he came on yesterday, and he was really the only player on the pitch.
He looked completely engaged with what he was trying to
Absolutely,
do.
absolutely. So, if we're looking for positives, there's three positives. Four, if you include James Garner. Five, I suppose, if you include the continued great form of Jordan Pickford, because, again, yesterday he made a couple of saves that kept us in the game. Problem, of course, is that you then look at, well, okay, if they're the positives, where's the evidence of improvement, particularly at the top of the pitch? And as much as I think Barry's got potential, and I think he will end up scoring a reasonable number of goals, maybe seven, eight, nine goals this season. What happened that the penalty shootout didn't fill anybody with any great confidence, did it?
The penalties were dreadful. The penalties were dreadful. And for me, penalties are one of the things that's, or the way that so many penalties are taken is one of the things that's ridiculous in the modern game. All this stuttering and stopping and never used to happen. And, how much of an advantage do players need? It's one on one, they're 12 yards out. Why do they have to have all this stuttering and stopping and trying to? Because all they're trying to do is make the goalie move to give themselves an even bigger advantage than only having 12 yards to kick a football. It's a nonsense. And, we got what we deserved yesterday, which was zilch. Jimmy Garner's second penalty wasn't a great one. His first one was a decent enough penalty, the one that brought us level. The second one was poor. Barry and Beto's were just shocking. Absolutely shocking. And then, as I said before, I'm watching Portsmouth Arsenal now, and the Arsenal penalty in the first half, no, second half, was just nonsense, an idiotic run-up and a stupid stutter, and then he put it wide. And you think to yourself, what goes through these footballers' minds? And I said that the other day, what on earth goes through the heads of footballers? Are they so dumb? Just run up and smack it, for Christ's sakes. If the goalie gets in the way, the goalie gets in the way. If you've hit it hard enough, you might take him in the back of the net as well. And wouldn't that give the crowd a lift? And just it makes you wonder. And the trouble is, never mind the Arsenal one. Just what are they doing in training with taking penalties?
Yeah.
I just don't understand the way that penalties are taken these days by so many players of so many different clubs. And I'm probably watching more football at the minute, with TV. Than ever, and the nonsense that is just—it's exasperating. It really is, and it's not just us. It's all manners of teams and players, and very talented players who, for some reason, just become complete bozos when it comes to penalties. Just crackers, in my opinion.
George, as a former goalkeeper, do you have a view on how penalties are taken?
I used to be the penalty taker in Oakwood Athletic. I never missed one. I took 11 and scored them all. Andy's right. It's a pretty simple thing to do. My only thought about the penalties yesterday was, and regular listeners would not need me to say that I'm not a big fan of Dwight McNeil. I was astonished he didn't take one. Maybe he was down for four or five, but I would have put him on to do it before Beto or Barry. I would never have given Beto a chance to take a penalty. But anyway, it's neither here nor there because the game had actually been lost long before then.
We were fortunate. Yeah, we were fortunate to get to extra time and penalties. If
Yeah, I mean,
truth be told, because we were poor as a we were poor throughout the game. We picked up a little bit in the second half. We got a penalty that, as we've all agreed, you know, had VAR been in operation, would have been overruled in very short time. So the game had gone. But then when the annoying thing is, when you're given that lifeline and you completely and utterly miserably fail to take it.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And that's where, you know, again, going back to the theme about leadership and about somebody, be it the manager or be it club captain, whatever. And George, the point that you made at the beginning about the huddle, getting people together and saying, look, you know, it doesn't matter how we got here, but we're now in a penalty shootout. And what happens with the next five shots determines whether we stay in the cup or not.
I have two tiny little thoughts. One is, you were talking about the coaching staff. I would say, and this is again from my professional point of view, Alan Irving and Leighton Baines particularly do not look like inspiring people to be working with. They are so passive. Every time Moyes talks to Irving's bubble that comes out of my mouth, oh, you've woken me up. Sorry, I was dozing there. There's no energy in it at all. And behind them, Seamus looks knackered as well. And that's really weird. And the other tiny thought I had yesterday was, are we approaching the point where you have to make, you don't have to, but it would be a good idea to make Garner the captain in order that at least the person who is setting the tempo for this at the moment rather sad team is the person who is setting the tempo.
That's a really good shout.
I have some sympathy for that, because the other thing as well is Tarko is not having the best of seasons. And he's got the on-field weight of responsibility being a captain as well. I think you're right, Arkid. I think purely on tempo and intent, I would give it Jimmy Garner as well right at this minute in time. And I'm not suggesting we chop and change captains on who's having a good game. But right now, he appears to be the player that's performing the most regularly.
I think so. Anyway, just a passing thought before we go and slaughter Villa.
Funnily enough, you mentioned Villa. Villa played Tottenham yesterday in the Cup. And I didn't watch all of it, but I watched a fair chunk of it. And Villa were 2-0 up at half-time, and Tottenham had been abject in the first half. But then whatever Thomas Frank said in the dressing room at half-time had quite a dramatic effect, because Spurs were considerably better in the second half than they'd been in the first half. And I thought to myself, there was a kind of a parallel there between that game and our game. You know, Sunderland were better first half than we were. Villa were considerably better than Spurs first half. But whilst we improved second half, Spurs' improvement was dramatic. And again, you know, what was said at half-time by Moisey and what was said at half-time by Thomas Frank, and it appeared to me that whatever Frank said was much more inspirational to his players than what Moisey said to our players. And I, you know, maybe I'm being unkind on Moisey there, but I just saw a massive difference in second half levels between Spurs and ourselves. And I guess Spurs aren't a barometer we should be setting, because I think we're still above Spurs in the league, and you know, but I just want so much better. I mean, like you've said it hundreds of times, Arkid. If we lose, we lose. But if we've played, you can accept it. But it's when you don't really play and you get beat, or worse, you get embarrassed, as we have been.
In the end, Andy, Everton got what they deserved yesterday, which was nothing.
Which was nothing, yeah.
They didn't put enough in. They didn't deserve it.
No. Nope.
I don't know how you can tolerate that when we got the same from the second half against Wolves, against West Ham. We got trolleyed by Brentford, we got trolleyed by Newcastle, we got trolleyed by Spurs. Somewhere, somebody has got to address this. I don't know where, and I don't know how. And also, like you've both said, we've no idea what anybody else thinks either.
No, all like I said, all I could garner last night and this morning is that the fan base appears split on those who are saying, listen, it's not as bad as it looks because we've got so many players for whatever reasons missing. Once they're all back, we'll be a different side. By God, do I hope that level, that opinion, or that body of opinion is right.
Who's
Because
left
you.
AFCON now?
Who's what, sorry?
Who's left? Who are the four teams left in the AFCON?
I don't know. I've not watched any of that.
Egypt,
Nigeria. I haven't watched it.
No, I haven't watched it. I'm just wondering about when the boys are coming home. Are they still playing? Because Idrissa plays for Senegal, doesn't he?
Senegal, yeah.
They're out, aren't they? We don't know.
I don't know.
I
I
know
don't
this is
know,
a
but
football podcast, but I don't know.
But clearly, the sooner him and the sooner Garnagay and Illiman and Dyche are back with Everton, that it can't come quick enough. It genuinely cannot come quick enough. And then, the injury front, we're missing KDH seriously for energy in midfield.
I think he's the most serious loss, Andy.
I don't disagree with that, bro.
Well,
I
that.
think his energy and his intent in games has been tremendous, and we have missed it seriously.
Yeah, and he pulls other players along with him, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
You know,
I mean
it's.
that was the start. That was the starting I wanted to sort of say about yesterday. Was there were times there was a couple of times when. Mikalenko got forward. There was a couple of times when Patterson got forward, and you think to yourself, "Where's the support?" And there was times we didn't have a player within 20 yards of someone who was trying to make something happen.
That's what I mean, Andy, about that there's no plan. There's no structure. The players don't know. They're not, the bottom line here is they're not being coached well enough.
No, that appears to be the biggest issue. There's what is going on with the coaching? Because the players are going out there with no, as you said, no plan, and no plan ends up with being a diminishing amount of self-belief.
Yes,
That's what.
I think there is a plan, and the plan is to keep it as tight as possible, and we'll score goals either on a breakaway, perhaps, although there's not much evidence of us doing that. And set pieces are vital to us. Now, currently, we don't have a set piece coach, so which is probably one of the reasons why A, we don't look very dangerous when we get a free kick or a throw in the opposition's half, and why we look quite poor trying to defend it. I'm gonna finish on this and try and
Well, before you finish, Paul, before you wrap it up,
yeah.
all I would say is if that is the plan, is to keep things tight and hopefully pinch one on the counter attack or from a set piece, that ain't going to invigorate the fan base. That you
Well,
know, pe people are going to go, people are going to go, and sit there, sit on their hands, and not get involved. With the game.
the biggest problem, Andy, here is that if we do on Sunday against Villa, which is going to be a lot harder, what we did against Nottingham Forest, everything we've moaned about will go out the window. Our problem is we don't know what to do at home. when the owners have gone, he knows perfectly well how to play away from home on the counter, keep it tight. What Paul just said is absolutely right. But what happens is they come to Bramley Moor.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch my team come over. We'll park the bus a bit and then maybe Beto will, you know, for fuck's
sake. What I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah, I know. We're all getting at the same thing. Go on, Paul, wrap it up.
All right. So what
that'll probably involve telling me to wrap up.
No, not at all. No. I'm trying to present a case for looking forward to things being better in you know, the final half of the season, because we're only just over halfway through the season. We know with the form of Pickford, we know with James Garner, and there's growing evidence with Armstrong, you know, Harrison Armstrong, there's three players that would pretty much walk into most teams around the Premier League. And then if you think about who's coming back, well, you know, and it seems odd saying this, but we really missed Michael Keane yesterday. We've got Jack Grealish to come back, notwithstanding what people, and we've said it about him hugging the lefty. You know, we're a better team with him in the team than we are without him. If Branthwaite gets fit, and I think, if I'm not wrong, he's back in training.
Well, see, is he back on the grass, Moisey said?
Yeah, he can't be that far away. Although, obviously, he's having been out a long time, it's going to take him a little while to get back. We've got Ndiaye to come back. We've got Garnagay to come back. We've got Dewsbury Hall to come back from injury. Seamus, I think it's irrelevant now whether he's injured or not, because he's not guaranteed to start every game. Alcaraz, jury out on him, but nevertheless he gives us options. And of course Tim was missing yesterday with an injury. So we get the bulk of those players back with the few players that we've got in form. And obviously defensively we're going to be so much better if we can get Branthwaite back into the side and fit. Because Branthwaite and O'Brien maybe as a central defensive pairing works. If Patterson can continue to show better form like he did yesterday, then it gives us again slightly more options at fullback. There is a route out of this. There is a route out of where we find ourselves currently. I don't think we should necessarily, and I don't think the players, and I don't think the manager, if following your line of thinking, George, which I think is an excellent line, I don't think we should be giving up on this season. We've got an awful lot of work to do to get it back on track. But if everybody comes back who's away currently and comes back fit and comes back in reasonable form and refresh because they haven't played as much football, perhaps, obviously, and Ndiaye and Garnagay different, then we should be able to pick up what we thought might have happened throughout the whole of the season, but obviously hasn't happened in recent weeks.
Fingers crossed, pal. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. I've exhausted my limits, my store of positivity. I'm deeply overdrawn and it may not last a couple more weeks. but hopefully it's not unfounded positivity.
No.
There's a logic to it, and you know, get these people back, and then maybe.
Well, that's what you've just espoused, Paul. Just backs up the feeling I got from trawling around the internet and forums and whatnot, that there's a 60-40 split, you know, in favour of, you know, get everybody back, we'll be a different side.
Yeah. Having said all of that, of course, the big quandary in, you know, not going back over old ground is why the players who've come into the team don't see this as an opportunity to stay in the team and don't feel as if they're just marking time waiting for the other players to come back.
Yeah, and create genuine competition for
and
places.
Create genuine, yeah, and that to me is a mystery that only those players themselves can answer. But hey, Okay. The players talk about being tired after playing many games in a short period of time. We're getting the same podcast, three podcasts in a week.
Well, maybe they should listen to us then.
What do you mean? They already do.
Oh, good old.
Yeah,
I just wish someone at the top would listen and talk to us and tell us, give us some idea of. Oh.
any final comments, George?
No, have a lovely week and see you for the Villa match when
Yeah.
everybody will be much more relaxed. The team will know exactly how they're going to play. Don't expect anything. But hit them on the break. Look for a free kick, and you never know. McNeil might get injured in training. That was bitchy, wasn't it? Sorry, Dwight.
All right. Guys, thanks very much. And everybody for listening. Thank you very much. And yeah, let's hope it starts getting better sooner rather than later. All right, guys. Thanks very much. Take care.
Cheers, Paul.
Bye bye.
Cheers.
Bye.